do the godly. Now, I don't want to drag this out too long this morning, but just pick your day. But it's important because it's the 18th of August, 1997, that this becomes so important. By the way, Grandma's back with some very interesting information. She's giving you the signs. When the government controls the food, water, and money, you've had it. And your government does. Doretha, our precious friend from up at West Ranch, sends her regards. And then we got this. Dow Jones nose dives 247 points. Now, somebody in here, tell me how many companies are on the Dow Jones index. So is it important if 30 stocks drop 247 points? No. These are the elite corporations manipulating the market and trying to distract you. You look at some of those other indexes and then you're going to shake, rattle, and get ready to roll.
Downhill.
So there's that. Now, let's talk about earthquakes. In a week's period of time around here, California, you will usually have many, many, many earthquakes. So we only even talk about ones above two. All the rest are, if they're mentioned at all, it'll be simply in passing. Now, why is it important? Right now, it's important in this area because in 1953, go down to Kelsey's and look on the wall and get the correct date, there was a massive earthquake through Tehachapi, which really, really was destructive. And then along came other aftershocks that just about took out Bakersfield. Now, that is not all that long ago. And neither is it unusual to have earthquakes. But lately, and this is always since I've been recording, if you've got 40 earthquakes of registration size in a week, that is super activity. You will find last week there were 136.
In the Tehachapi Bakersfield area?
Well, most of them have occurred there. This is a seismograph watch. And I'm sure that Soltec would have a lot more to say about this. You see, when Little Crow talks about or is asked about people like Scallion. I always do that to him.
I have a question. I think this is my intuitive ask. I'm also a conduit myself. That taking the pressure off the San Andreas fault. I was in a personal interview with Satya Sai Baba, where the woman I traveled with to see him, my first trip, we had two interviews together, and she's a psychic. She got to ask Satya Sai Baba if we were in major danger from a destructive earthquake in Los Angeles. And because we were there just a couple months after the Whittier earthquake. This interview occurred in January of 1988. And Baba just said, it will shake from time to time, but no major destruction. Why fear when I'm here? And there was a devotee in our group who had actually had his life saved by Baba in that Whittier quake, because he lived close to the epicenter, worked at night, had come in exhausted and just crashed on the floor. And when he was awakened by the earthquake early in the morning, he was not on the floor. Luckily, he was not there. He was on a sofa because a big bookcase would have crushed him. if he stayed there. And this devotee in the interview said to Swami, "You saved me in the last earthquake." And when I got back to California, he stayed on later than myself. He'd written a story about this experience for the Satya Sai newsletter, and the last words of it was, "Why fear when I am here? The Lord God will protect you and put you wherever you're supposed to be."
In the right place.
In the right place. But he, Satya Sai Baba himself, said that there will be no major earthquake in the L.A. basin. I don't know about the water and all that, but supposedly he said some things privately to his students about major changes coming on, and then he said, "No, I didn't say that, so I don't know." I just wanted to share that personal experience with you, that I was in an interview with him after the Whittier quake.
We better get her out of here because it could be a shaking day. You see how random life is. And when we talk about earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, whatever we're going to discuss as logically being the hand of God at work, you can't longer depend on what you're told because it is no longer just the hand of God involved. And I doubt Baba would have said in meaning. Once again, you always have language problems. I am often misunderstood. You can talk about fear. You can talk about personal placement. But it seems highly unlikely that Sai Baba would say and mean that there will be no major earthquakes in L.A., because there will be. There are every day.
Right. Right. And then if you told us just the opposite, we would have been in fear, because he has been known to say to some people who come in and say someone's dying from cancer, and he'll say, no, you'll be okay. I will cure." And then the person dies 2 months later, and the family comes back and says, "Swami, you said you'd cure him." And he said, "Well, at least he had a good 2 months."
We blew off his back.
He had a good 2 months. You never know what the avatar is going to do.
You never know what the teacher is going to test you with.
Exactly, okay.
So you want the miracle of proper psychic knowledge. What you really want is a fortune teller, and you're not going to believe them anyway. You're going to make your own rationalization. The facts are there will be a very large earthquake along the San Andreas Fault. It probably will come from the Hayward Fault in the north, the Garlock Fault in this area, and the San Jacinto Fault down around San Bernardino to the south. One will trigger another. Will it trigger all at once? Very possibly, depending on what happens with volcanic eruptions, tension easement along the Ring of Fire, reflective energy, all sorts of things. But the facts are, even your ecological engineers and your geophysicists know there will be, and there will be very large and massive earthquakes. Even smaller earthquakes can do massive damage. The San Andreas Fault is not the most dangerous fault itself in the L.A. Basin. The Elysian Park Fault is far more dangerous to Los Angelians. And there isn't any... Got to be careful or I won't have a voice this afternoon. There is an entire grid work, cross grid, of smaller faults underneath LA. And you have built these cities, massive, massive weight on top of undermined and under-tunneled earth. Some of the airport areas and so forth are fill dirt. They will liquefy. More importantly, though, you pump oil out from under these tunnels. Your whole system is sinking. It cannot be forever untouched. So what do you do about it? You can sit and shake. You can move yourself out. You can know that you will be in your right place regardless of whether you stay or you go. What you really have to do is look to your preparation depending on how much you want to suffer. It seems to me that you wouldn't want to suffer quite so much. So you would do some modicum if you're in those areas. And there isn't any place in the United States of America or Canada that's safe from anything. From anything. Maybe it shakes more out here, but you sure have had a lot of tornadoes and hurricanes, droughts, floods, and they are each getting to be equally destructive, both to life and property. So one becomes no less or more important than another except what accompanies it. You have to look at reason. You have to look at what you have done as a people. Never mind what God has done. Look what you have done. You have built a major stadium in San Francisco on top of the fault. On top of it. And when it cracks on this side and it cracks on the other side. And people say, oh my. And then they fill in the cracks and put some more seats there. And then what happens? You have a civil defense system. You do? I want to tell you how intelligent that civil defense system is up there. That fault runs right on out through that and within 3 feet of three hospitals and keeps going out toward the ocean. And guess what? Right under the civil defense building. Intelligence. When L.A. goes, and it will, I'm not talking about it all just falling off into the ocean. It won't work that way. The tectonic plates do not work that way. How do you think the Himalaya Mountains got where they are? The same type of underthrust and upthrust that you're going to get. That Pacific plate comes and impacts the North American plate and dips under and moves north. So your outer limits are moving north. And you're going to be lucky that you don't try to hang on to it because it will slip and it will go on by you. Because it is going to break. This is just plain universal physics. And of course, each of you who has progressed far enough in your lessons to realize that this is an illusion that has already been experienced and you are writing, know full well all you've got to do is not write these things into your experience. But you won't do it because you hang on to this as if it is the end of everything. I mean the end of all things, the end in importance. I mean, you will measure this incident against the possibility of it being this prophecy. So you will live and die by the prophecy someone else has written for your play while you grin and bear it and say, oh, well, we always knew it would come to be. So now comes some people who say, I don't think I like the end of that play, sir. And yeah, I think I might go back down there and see if we can make some impact on the intelligence or lack thereof of the species running around down there, riding their play. It will be massive, but it will not be massive in the sense, and Baba is right on and nobody ever really hears him or me. He's absolutely right. There will be a thought form projection of these things, and it has no reality whatsoever. You make it real. And when he says there will be no earthquakes, there will be no...
There'll be water is shaking from time to time, but no major destruction, he said.
Listen to what you just said.
There will be earthquakes. That's the nature of around here. We were talking about that. We said
what I'm asking you to hold on to. Because I don't want somebody to ever say, and hear me, I'm not quarreling with you. I hear exactly what you're saying, and I'm going to explain it. I don't want somebody coming and saying, well, Bobby said there wouldn't be any bad destruction, and look, 300,000 people are dead. No, they're not. Don't you understand they're not? All we've got to do to tell you the truth is tell you nothing is real.
Can I tell you Well, I repeated this story to a group of Sai Baba devotees, and then very next day...
Well, that's not this room.
And the very next day was the morning of the Northridge quake.
Do we hear what I'm... I hear the countering, because I hear the reality of it. What is lacking is the ability to comprehend that nothing happens except what you do after that next breath. It isn't real. The reality is that which you are, in essence, thought and mind. And you can control. And Baba could control and literally stop the shaking. Because it changes perception. Everything only has perception.
You can do that.
I'm
sorry if I've been disruptive. I just have a message for you, that's all. I have messages, and that's it. I don't know if anyone else has had as close contact as much as I bothered myself. Here, you sent me.
Well, we could get into all sorts of things. It's like I said earlier about the four sons. I don't choose carelessly. And until you understand my own origin, you can't understand that I sent Baba. Not Doris. Don't misunderstand.
Baba says he's the father. He's the father, and he's the one who sent Christ. That's what he's saying. God.
We'll go to a meeting of his sometime later.
Anyway,
let's
be quiet. Okay, I'll be quiet.
He's in India.
No hostility, please. It'll just bounce right back, right in your face.
We're here to talk about now and our own missions, our own necessary experiences, our responsibility to a species that is. And it doesn't matter if it's a thought form or reality, it is. And you're stuck with it. You came here as a human, you're going to remain a human.
No, I'm leaving. I could leave if I want to. I'm staying for the fireworks.
Well, you do what you want to do. But our job is not Satya Sai Baba. Our job is here. To consider these things and these preparations to be ready. And when you cling too intently to an energy form, you err. Because it makes you become blinded. You have to confront that which is, knowing within that you can change it. And this is the downfall of most good intentions. This is why people will not listen to you. This is why there is a continual flooding back of, I know the truth, and no one will listen to me. And I know that it resides here. No, only your portion of truth resides here. This was another very good experience for Doris. This was at the same time of seeing, being shown these things, And she's sitting there, and she said, there's some other things I really need to talk to you about that are really, truly distressing me. I have found a book, somebody sent me a book, whatever. And it talks about these things. And what she was at that time referring to a few pages from the Talmud Emmanuel. And speaking of Emmanuel as Jesus, as the Christ, this particular subject. And Little Crow said, I don't want to talk about that today. When you're out here next, we will talk about this. And so time goes by. And they're sitting together again. And she said, you know, this doesn't go along with anything that I have read in the Bible about his end or his transition. And now she's talking to a Lakota Sioux Indian who is just looking at her. And he said, I want to put something in perspective for you. And I want you to think on it very carefully as you go about and try to perceive or analyze who is what. What teacher is what? Do you need a guru? What is what? Truth is truth. And you're born with the knowledge of good, bad, right, and wrong. Because there are no such definitions to those words in the higher instances of experience. And she says, well, it just bothers me because, you know, there has obviously been a misleading, or this is frightening because people have died by just simply writing this information. And that's frightening because I'm writing it. And he said, I want to again quiet you and say, if you had never experienced, was never in your consciousness, any such being as Jesus, Emmanuel, Isu, of what you are now going to stand there or sit there and tell me is the Holy Land, what would be your perspective? And I said, but we base our entire soul experience on these things. And he said, isn't it too bad? If you had never heard of any entity called by that name, how upset would this make you? Well, I wouldn't know about it, so it wouldn't upset me at all. And he said, then maybe it's time you quit focusing on that and focus on that. And of course, she being wise ass, said, well, you're pointing up there. Are you talking extraterrestrial? What are you talking to me? And he said, well, of course, anything that has no roots in the earth is extraterrestrial. And you can have roots in the earth because you can bury your feet up in the mud if you want to, and that makes you terrestrial. But God is an essence, an energy, and is not rooted to anything other than self. So if God dwells within you, you may have your feet rooted, but he does not. That is the part of you that is eternal and is universal. So stop limiting it. And you call it whatever you want to call it. And you will always pick something like brother or father, grandfather, teacher, one of these because you have no word of reference for Creator. Well, if you think that isn't worth another month of thought. And yet great teachers come among you to try to show you exactly that. But mankind wants to focus, wants something they can reach out and touch and grasp and pull to themselves. And God is universal. God is universal. And one set of Indian tribes will call that great spirit, that greatness, Wakantanka. Amdoji. Many names. Deity. Any one of which is perfectly suitable. Because you are the projection of thought, of light, from that resource. And I call it resource at this particular lesson because source produces everything. And we're speaking of human entity. And it doesn't matter where you are. The evangelist that will get up and tell you, I am a Zionist and proud of it, has lost his marbles. Are you godly or are you a Zionist? Do you understand what I'm saying? Because this is all right to be a Zionist. What is it that you mean by that? Well, it means that I am going to experience these rituals in this religion. God is not a religion. God is truth and God is light, and he is available for everyone. All you need, absolutely all you need, is to put your hand in the hand of that one. And our very own exuberance gets the better of us. Because we want to share this realization, this knowledge of ourselves evolving and being and knowing and understanding that all the rest is of no importance except that you've created it and it is. It exists. Because you have brought it together and used it. And your set of circumstances are just like the anthill. There's some that work and bring the leaves and the crumbs. There are others that mate with a queen ant and make new ants. But troubles come upon an anthill. Somebody leaves the water on too long in the lawn, and trouble comes to that anthill. Wouldn't it have been wiser if the ants had made a shelter over its opening to keep the water out? That's what I'm talking about. While you are experiencing in manifest human form, you have to be prepared for the other physical things that happen. Because you cannot at will. Baba may be able to do this and some of the great gurus, but I'm telling you, in this room, there's not one being that can disperse yourself and reassemble. And yet everyone in this room knows you have the capability to do that and do it at will. So why don't you? Have you ever really thought why you don't? And what is your message? Are you supposed to sit on this earth cross-legged as the lotus and wait to ascend? And only go to gurus and teachers who are going to teach you to ascend. You're going to ascend, some faster than others, because you've missed the point. You are manifest human beings. What is the all-fired hurry to get back to this essence form? Because you don't like it here? You're here for a reason. And you made a commitment and an agreement. And some of you keep breaking it all the time. I want to ascend. I just want to ascend. Bullshit, you want to ascend. Then why'd you come here to get in our way? This is not what your journey is about, ascension. Your journey is about truth and knowing. And coming into some reasonableness with your God relationship. Does everybody hear me? The teacher, for goodness sakes, is what you must come to be to those who do not know. You are the teacher. You are the guardians. You are the guides. And you agreed not to go down there and put on magic tricks. You agreed to come to this place in this human form and not do magic tricks. To let the soul of man understand his immortality, his greatness, his perfection, his oneness with God. And the lesser knowing ones are your responsibility. Not just to preach to them, but to show them that God is not a magic charade of fun and games. God is truth, and He is your own attachment and your own immortality and universal life. And sometimes I, Hatton, get really, really down. And I say, what in the hell is the use? But I made a commitment also, and I keep my commitment of all of the things you learn as you go through these dimensions unto God, and within God is that. Number one, you keep your commitment. You're not here today and gone tomorrow. You don't say, oh, sir, I will be ready to serve, and then lose your phone number. But there is great understanding why you are urged to want to give this. Because in your inner being you know truth. And you want to share. You watch what other people do. And you see that it is not correct. Or it's too limiting. Or it's too binding. Or, oh, they sinned. Or they didn't sin. Or they whatever. And this is something that many of your brothers in the universe do not even have as part of their language is sin. You make a mistake or you do it right. And in the human form, you make a lot more mistakes than you do things right. Or do you? The facts are you do more things right, but you never notice those. You never notice those. And you see, I would have the same problem that our friend who has come from Baba to share with us would have. If Doris walked into Baba's meeting and said, I have come with a message from Hatton to share with all of you. It's your holiday. It is your special time. Do you think they would let me speak? And isn't that sad? Because the truth is there.
Anyway, Swami says no one can speak for him, so there. No one can speak for him.
But you are.
I feel very much in touch with him a lot of the time. I couldn't find accommodations last night. I was left at a hotel, which was empty. And there are Indians, and I ended up staying in another hotel.
How fortunate. That's very fortunate. What time is it?
It is 12:25.
I think we better take a break.
Good time for lunch.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for every experience we're able to share. We grow, and only in that way can we grow. Salut.
Salut. Time back?
No later than 1:30. I have a massive amount of material to cover.
We're gathered for the afternoon session of August the 17th, 1997, and the commander has shown up.
I guess I should say good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hatton, in light, in the light of the radiant one source, I need days and days and days. I don't need just an afternoon. We write for hours every day to the point that I know you can't read it and keep up with it. And you're not blessed with the type of journey that allows you to either focus totally on your spirituality or on your humanness. And these two things get very confused because you cannot be without either while you're walking around on two legs trying to sort your consciousness and wipe out all those lies that you have been fed, all those disappointments, all those painful things from the joy that you come to know as knowing. And you can't sell that to anybody else. You can't even give it away, no matter how hard you try. And this is why I have asked all of you, as you begin to see fact and truth as it is, you really err when you try to cram it down the throats of your family, especially. They will mark you off as kooky, nutty, nitwits. You've joined this cult. And then the older you get, the more remarkable the image becomes. Because, well, we lost her or him to this cult years ago. And at least they have come back far enough that we can talk to them. If you are coming here for only your spirituality and your truth, it's the wrong place. I have a greater mission. That's why there are no membership, no rules, no church, no cult, no nothing. Because we have to reach the ones, and they know when they have been reached. People say, well, your distribution would be overwhelming if you adjust. We reach the ones we need to reach. And it doesn't mean by any means that you can't continue your searching. But I often wonder, what is it you search for after you find? Most never know they found it. And some of you are shocked to find you never lost it. You're trying to turn something into a god idol, an icon. I like that better than I do idol. You are focusing on a being, on a statue, on a ritual, on a thing. And it doesn't have anything to do with you and spirituality with God. And people don't understand this. So when you try to say, I'm not a Jesuian, I'm not a Jesuit, I'm not a Bobbian, I can respect every teacher's role. And you will experience that which you need in your journey. I am of the hosts of God. And it would be nice if you saw to your spiritual lightedness with God and stop all of the fragmentation and the frazzling elements of being in this state of something. What you are is being in a state of total confusion. Your state of bliss or ecstasy comes quite unannounced. You can work at it and work at it and work at it, and you may get a glimmer of it here and there, but it will hit you at the most inappropriate times, and you will be washed over with this joy or this feeling within that literally brings tears to the soul. It is so precious. And once touched, that's what you're searching for. You are searching for that touch again. And oh, if you can just find it in its physical form, but you won't ever. When you talk about sex, the sexual act, the sexual relationship, many intelligent, learned people will say, well, it is an expression of love so great that it opens the portal of all this bullshit. And you're listening. You want to be gracious, but say what? anybody touched by the hand of God. And there are you in this room who have been. It ain't sex. It so far surpasses sex in its electrical energy that you never, ever find anything again in your experience except that very thing that you can even relate to it. That is birthing of a soul energy form into its work, into its knowingness. And you can have spent years being whatever you are. And the instant of that birth, it will pull you up out of the ethers. This fog, some will say, oh, I think I was drowning some way. And this hand pulls me up. And it was like no experience I've ever known. That's right. And you go around looking for this from some human entity. While all the while you have it. And yet it's not yours to go and tell everybody else your experience. I'm going to go now and I'm going to show you what I mean.